Welcome, listeners, to another Plug in America podcast. I'm Kate Baker, and I'm your host. Today, we are talking to Peter Rosick, who is with Hawaiian Electric Company, and he's a member of their electric vehicle readiness team. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much, Kate. Good to talk to you.
Peter, the first thing I'd like to ask you about is the Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative. What is that exactly, and where do EVs fit in?
Okay, let me take one step back, and I imagine you're aware, but not everyone is, that the Hawaiian Islands are over 90% dependent on imported oil for all of our energy needs, not just surface transportation and air transportation like most other places on the mainland, but also for electricity. So we are the most heavily dependent on oil, and of course, in the last couple of years in particular, that has begun to create some real problems. It's a security problem because we're at the end of a very long trip for the oil tankers. It's an economic problem because of the rising cost and the volatility of oil. And it's an environmental problem, of course, for the globe as well as for the Hawaiian Islands, which are probably among the most vulnerable spots in the United States, certainly, for rising sea levels and things like that. So back in 2008, the state government and the U.S. Department of Energy signed an agreement, which they called the Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative, and later that year, the Hawaiian Electric Company signed an agreement with the state, what we call the Energy Agreement. And basically that said, we're going to get off oil in a very dramatic way. We set as a goal 70%, what we call clean energy, by 2030. And then the state legislature passed this into law. So we have a goal of getting 40% of our sales at the electric utilities from renewable sources by 2030, and for the state as a whole to reduce our energy use by 30%, so through energy efficiency and conservation. So that 40 and 30 comes together to create this, what we say, 70% clean energy by 2030. Now, clearly, if we're going to reduce the amount of oil we use for electricity, we also have to reduce the amount of oil that we use in transportation, because otherwise we end up basically importing the same amount. So we really have to bring down our oil use for both transportation, particularly ground transportation. We can't do very much about air transportation at the moment, but for ground transportation and electricity, we have to bring our use of oil way, way down in a pretty rapid way. So EVs are, as we see it, an essential part of that, the ground transportation element.
Now, you work with the Hawaiian Electric Company, and in, mm-hmm. I think it was late 2010, so about a year ago, they launched a pilot project to offer electric vehicle charge rates at a lower rate for some customers on Oahu, Maui, and Hawaii. How's that been working out?
It's working very well. It's a demonstration project, and that's something you learn from, and we are definitely learning from it. The program is designed, of course, to encourage people to charge their vehicles overnight after 9 p.m. and before 7 a.m., which is our low period when we have a lot of excess capacity. And also, we have an increasing number of wind turbines coming online, which of course are turning, sometimes even producing even more electricity at night than they do during the day. And we need to have an outlet for that renewable energy. So for a lot of reasons, it makes absolute sense here as everywhere for electric vehicles to charge overnight. So the rates are set up to encourage that. And we think something like over a third of all the electric vehicles in the islands at the moment, which numbers about 250, which, you know, compared to the mainland may not seem like a lot, but is a pretty substantial start number here, are already on these electric vehicle rates. I think other people are kind of checking out what it's like to charge without these discount rates, and eventually I think they'll decide whether it makes sense for them to come on board. One thing about the rates is that if you are a person with a typical home and you can move some of your other electric uses like dishwashing, clothes washing, and so forth, to after 9 o'clock, you can do your whole house. Everything you do can be done at this discounted rate. So if you're able to transfer, to shift your use of electricity for charging and everything else to after 9 o'clock, you can really, you know, reduce your energy costs substantially. No more gasoline and a significant discount on a good part of the electricity you use. And so far, we've had a reasonable response. We're finding some people who understandably, don't find it as useful and have we're talking to those people. We're trying to find ways to make this a more useful program. And so we're learning and people are adopting it. We're not done with our learning curve for sure, because we have the possibility of adding a number more vehicles over the next couple of years, but we are certainly moving along and we're learning a lot from it.
And do you plan to continue this program for the next few years or foreseeable future?
I think what our plan is to keep going for the 3 years that we committed in the program. Somewhere along the line, we'll see where we stand, whether we want to, how we want to change the program, whether we want to, find ways to expand it, deal with other things that our customers are telling us about how they want to use it. And then, somewhere before the present program expires, we'll go back to our Utilities Commission and propose a continuation. But I'm sure it won't be exactly the same as we're doing now because we are learning a lot. But the basic goal is going to be the same. We want to encourage people to get an electric vehicle. We want to encourage people to charge it overnight in their homes and businesses if possible. We don't want to take extra demand onto our peak period, which is 5 to 9 p.m., and we want to make this work in the most economically efficient way we can for our customers. So those will be the goals. How exactly we meet those goals will depend on, a little bit more about what we learn about how people are driving, how people are charging. Frankly, we've been kind of amazed. We assumed at the beginning everybody would rush out and get a level 2 charger. We find that a number of people are staying with the 110 when they first purchase their vehicles. I think, again, they're kind of trying it out, seeing if it works for them. If it does, and in many cases I think it will, they will just stay with 110 and then decide whether to come on the discount rates or not. So people are feeling their way here in Hawaii, as I think they are in most places.
My next question for you, Peter, is about something that didn't happen. You probably know what I'm referring to. In the middle of May, sometime in 2010, there was a South Korean company, CT&T, that announced they were going to build this enormous $200 million manufacturing plant in Hawaii, and it was pretty exciting. But then by February, they already canceled it. What happened there, and how did that affect the Hawaiian EV movement?
Well, I can't speak for CT&T. I can tell you that Hawaii is not a very good place to do manufacturing of anything that weighs more than about a pound. You have to import all your raw materials. You have to, and then you assemble them here in a place with very high land costs, very high labor costs, and then you basically have to turn around and ship most of them out of the state. So you pay a lot for shipping in front and in back, and then you have some high costs here. So when they first announced it, we were certainly, we certainly encouraged them to go ahead, but we were pretty, we were somewhat skeptical that it would ever happen. And, so it's not exactly surprising. They're a big, basically golf cart manufacturer in Korea. That's how they got started. And it would have been great, but it didn't happen, and it's not too surprising. And frankly, it doesn't really impact our local EV program at all. Like other places, I think one of our biggest challenges right now is getting more vehicles into the marketplace. We've got a fair number of Nissan Leafs. We had more people interested in the Nissan Leaf than any other state in the country on a per capita basis. We just started getting the Mitsubishi iMiEV or iCar, as they may call it in the United States. We've got some Volts around. We've got some WeGos and some, miscellaneous other kinds of electric vehicles. But, the Volt, for example, the Chevy folks or GM folks have not committed to make this a primary primary market. We're a very small market. We've only got about 1 million-plus people. You know, we do have these expenses of transportation to move the cars here and everything. So not surprisingly, they're looking at markets where they think they can sell more or more quickly, or where they can influence the decision makers like Washington, D.C. So we'd love to have more, and we're working very hard to get with the Hawaii Automobile Dealers Association to get more electric vehicles on the ground here. But this factory that never happened never really played a great part in our planning. If it had come to pass, we would have been thrilled and gratified. The fact that it didn't doesn't change much for us.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Hawaii may not be a big market, but it's often been said, in fact, I think by you, that it's paradise for EVs. What do you think it would take for other less favored places to achieve widespread EV adoption?
Well, let me say why I obviously think Hawaii is a great place for EVs. First of all, we have very short driving distances. We have temperate climate year-round. We have a lot of visitors here. We have 7 million-plus tourists who come here every year who, you know, would have the opportunity to rent an EV and drive it around for a week and really try it out, you know, without making a huge commitment before they go home to Minnesota or wherever they came from. And, you know, we have a very environmentally conscious population. And as I've said, you know, pretty much everybody is aware of the necessity of getting us off oil significantly. So there's a lot of interest and a lot of enthusiasm for the EV. And we had a, back in the day, Hawaiian Electric was back in the 80s and 90s in the first EV wave, if you will. We had a small fleet of EVs and we were very much encouraging them. And we drove most of them until they would drive no longer, some converted Geos and some small light trucks and even a shuttle bus. And we were very sorry to see that whole, you know, the electric car seeming death at that time. So this is a new chance for us. The technology is obviously a lot better. The enthusiasm is a lot better. So we're very excited about that. What it will take, I think, is first of all, a commitment from the utility is very important because ultimately they're going to be supplying the juice and need to find a way to cooperate with the people who want to put in the chargers or the charge networks and the people who want to sell the vehicles. We here have a very strong relationship with the local Hawaii Automobile Dealers Association. Last 2 years ago, we became a sponsor of the annual auto show. Used to be the only sponsor there was the bank because they like to make car loans, but we decided this was a place to go and show the EVs and explain what was going on. You need a state or city government that's willing to extend some benefits to EV owners. We've had free parking for EVs since the 90s when that first wave came through. You can go on the use the high occupancy vehicle lanes. There's now a law that says as the number of EVs increase, you have to increase the number of EV of electric vehicle parking lots in parking lots of a certain size, We generally have a supportive and encouraging kind of municipal government, and all of those things are going to be part of helping to make make it easy for the first adopters, make it comfortable for people to get in there and try it, we've got a place needs to have the kind of city government or regional government that's willing to do things like, as you know, in the Portland area, for example, or, you know, willing to look at what's needed in terms of signage, in terms of, other kinds of things that'll make it easy for adopters to adopt and then to use their vehicles and find the charge spots and so forth. We are, we've worked with Better Place here for some time, and they're about to unveil a network of about 120 charge spots around the islands. We have a local company called Volta, a couple of local, really, to me, they're kids. They're recent college graduates who have jumped into the charge spot market with this idea of using the charge spots and paying for them with a kind of a marketing arrangement where people can sponsor the charge spots. And that looks to me to be a very innovative approach to it. We have AeroVironment in the marketplace as well. So all of these things need to happen, and they need to be at very least, government's got to get out of the way, and at very best, government's got to be supportive of that happening. So, you know, it takes that kind of commitment of the government, of the private sector, of the utility, and, you know, to kind of cultivate the enthusiasm. And I think there'll be some markets where obviously it'll be easier, where people do drive shorter distances, or where EVs will probably be second vehicles for a while, or, you know, the one that stays at home, whereas you have another vehicle for your longer trips. Here in Hawaii, pretty much they can serve any purpose that you can enjoy. Shai Agassi, when he was here at one point, was talking about Israel. He said, you know, Israel is a small country, and any vehicle that leaves Israel is driven out of the state of Israel has been stolen, because it goes across the border into a neighboring Arab country. So places that are islands or islanded, or, you know, have somewhat limited driving possibilities. And I think of San Francisco, for example, is a great place where, you know, the overwhelming majority of people would be able to use an EV much of the time. I think zip cars, I'm waiting for zip cars to come to Hawaii, but I think, you know, places that have that kind of opportunity and a population that are ready to go for it, those places would be ideal, and it'll spread from there.
Peter, let's wind up our conversation by testing your powers of prediction. just for fun, what do you think will happen? Yeah, in about 20 years from now, if most of the vehicles in Hawaii continue to rely on dirty, outdated internal combustion energy, how do you think
life will be? We're going to have a real problem. We're going to have a real problem if that's the case, simply because, you know, oil is getting harder to find. It's getting more expensive. It is getting more perilous in terms of getting it into tankers that come here. You know, we already have more than one vehicle for every man, woman, and child in the state. So if we're going to continue down that road, we're going to run into some real difficulties. And it's not going to fit in. At the utility, we're convinced we can reach the goals we have set and have been set for us. But if we don't have a similar change in the driving habits, we're going to be in a very weird situation where, for Hawaii anywhere, where you know, all the oil that's imported that used to go to the utility is now going to be going to vehicles, or it's going to be a very difficult situation. And of course, the air pollution and everything else that goes with the internal combustion engine is only going to get worse. So it's not a very promising future if nothing changes from the ICE.
Well, to look on the brighter side of that question, what do you picture life in Hawaii being like in about 20 years if EVs become the main form of transportation there?
Well, first of all, I think that we all here in Hawaii need to change some of our basic habits. We need to use mass transit more than we do now. We have a good bus system, but it needs to get better. We need to be, you know, in a place like this, we should be doing a lot more personal mobility, by which I mean walking, bicycling. I'd love to see segways on the city streets and that sort of thing. And especially the kids who are now being driven to school need to be bicycling to school, you know, to deal with some of our obesity problems and health problems. But I envision a future where the EV is the main form of vehicle transportation. But I think even 20 years from now, we'll still see a number of ICE vehicles. I just hope that they're low mileage vehicles, high mile per gallon vehicles. And the military is here and they're testing hydrogen vehicles right now. So I think there's going to be, like in every other transition, you know, from it's going to be beta and VHS for a while, and eventually be VHS, and then all of a sudden it's compact disc and DVDs, and nobody can even remember what a cassette looks like. I think we're going to go through a similar transition, and I think the electric vehicle is going to be the mainstay, but I think, you know, as it should be, as it ought to be here, but there'll also be some other ways of, some other kinds of transportation that will reduce our oil use. So that's my vision. A lot more of us walking around in the nice Hawaiian sunshine or riding bicycles, but also if we are going to be in vehicles, they should be electric vehicles, or maybe a few, some hydrogen vehicles, or maybe some just 50, 60 mile per gallon vehicles.
So it sounds like you're saying that EVs are not the ultimate magical bullet, but they're just a very important factor.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I don't think anything is going to be the magical bullet, but I think, you know, the more EVs there are and the more people have the experience of them, the more they're going to find that's the desirable transportation source. But there certainly will be people, I think even 20 years from now, who will still be won't have made the conversion, or for whatever reason don't find that the EV works perfectly for them. So I think we're going to have a period of time where we're going to have a lot of different vehicle choices, as long as we're getting them, as long as we're reducing our oil use. And I think the EV is going to emerge the winner because it just makes the most sense. But, you know, Americans, when it comes to cars, don't always do what makes the most sense. Let's face it. We tend to choose cars for reasons other than fuel efficiency or environmental concerns and even price. So I think it'll be a transition, and I think there'll be a lot of players for a relatively long period of time. But I am confident, and Hawaiian Electric certainly is confident and hopeful, that the EV is the ultimate choice. Because, as I mentioned before, the glory of the EV for us is not only that we can encourage charging off-peak, but that it will provide a way for us to use some of the renewable energy produced overnight that we would not normally have an outlet for, wind energy in particular. And eventually, you know, it's down the road, but we're looking at vehicle-to-grid. These cars driving around represent a huge battery that the utility could use. We have a, being a very remote system, we can't rely on the mainland for support. We can't, if we have a problem, we have to deal with it locally. We have to have enough capacity and so forth to meet our needs here. So having this big mobile battery out there that we could periodically tap if we have an emergency of generation shortfalls or things like that just would be wonderful when that comes to pass. So, we don't talk about that a lot now because it's way down the road and we first have to get all those EVs out there. But the potential for making not just transportation but electricity distribution here in the islands much better is huge with the EV, and that's why we are supporting it. That's why we're optimistic about it.
You are painting a very exciting picture of the future, Peter, and let's hope that your second prediction is the one that comes true.
Absolutely.
And
in the meantime,
thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
It's been a pleasure, Kate. Anytime. Nice to talk to you.
This edition of the Plug in America podcast was produced by Kate Baker and edited by Joseph Puentes, with music composed by Red Bennett. The Plug in America podcast is supported by listeners like you. For more information, go to pluginamerica.org or email us at podcast@pluginamerica.org.